You are listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network.
Soccer Today, live on SPN Radio, your new live show about the beautiful game in all its glory, with Dwayne Rollins and Kevin Laramie. Give us a call. Studio line 929-477-3874. MLS, EPL, La Liga, Champions League, all is fair game. Powered by the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit us at sportspodcastingnetwork.com.
And welcome to the penultimate episode of Soccer Today's pilot period. We're looking to go near daily on June the 6th, Kevin. Kevin Laramie joins me as always. I am Dwayne Rollins, for those that don't know. Kevin, how are you today?
I am doing great, Dwayne. It's, well, getting close to June 10th, isn't it, where the Euros will be starting. We have the Copa coming up, the Champions League final on Saturday, and Giovinco hasn't been chosen for the Italian national team. A lot of topics today on Soccer, Dwayne.
Yeah, exactly. That is going to be our tease question. We call it our tease question today, which you're welcome to call us and talk about if you want, or any other topic that is on your beautiful minds out there today. 929-477-3874 is that number to call us in. The number, the call is, the board will be open for calls at about 12:30. In the meantime, we have Elf de Blasis on to talk about the snub of Giovinco or the justified decision based on fit. Depends on your perspective, Kevin, and we talked about that yesterday on Two Solitudes, but Elf's going to join us today to talk a little bit about that and also just break down Italy in a general sense and talk about their hopes heading into Euro 2016. Good time there. We've had Elf on the Rest of the Story show before. He's for those that don't know, that are American maybe or not, at least from Canada, that I guess not from Canada, can be American or otherwise, but if you're not Canadian, you might not know Elf, but he's a longtime voice of Serie A here in this country and knows his stuff. So this is a good guest. He should be coming on the line in about 13 minutes. What are your thoughts today, Kevin? What's on the top of your mind right now, though?
Well, it's quiet, right? And it's been busy Wednesdays in MLS for the last few weeks. So today it's actually a little quiet for me, and there's no post-game show tonight. So I'm more contemplating which side of Madrid am I going to choose or cheer or just have emotions for. Am I going to have emotions for any Madrid side on Saturday? I don't know. It's a question. I was really interested last week with the Europa League final, Dwayne, between Liverpool and Sevilla. Sevilla won for the third straight year. But Liverpool, you know, the whole story of the former giant, the former darling of the entire world of soccer coming back into prominence, and the Klopp story, and oh, his fifth straight defeat in the final. All those storylines are interesting. But now we're talking about Madrid, Atletico, the former winners of Europa League, the former minnows of Spain, in a way. Now they're battling their arch rival for the supremacy of Europe. It's quite an intriguing philosophy clash on the pitch, too, because you have the money, the wallet, the bank filled with gold of Real Madrid versus Simeone, defense, and misfits, a gang of misfits fighting against the richest club in the world. So it's like literally David versus Goliath on Saturday.
To me, there's only one choice of what side to Madrid to choose. You can either go with the people or you can go with the club of the elites. And I tend to err towards the side of the people. And I know I just irritated a lot of Real Madrid fans when I said that in the all mother history. I'm not going to go too far back on the history and who may have cheered for him back in the day, because it's not their fault who cheered for them. But nonetheless, if you ever travel in Madrid or in sort of the northeastern or sort of western part of Spain, you'll find that Atletico Madrid is a massively popular team, and Real Madrid, the team that the tourists watch. But nonetheless, it will be sort of a blue collar versus white collar, riches versus poorness Goliath, David, whatever you want to spin it on the week. I love the Champions League final, though, regardless the pomp and circumstance around it, just the fact that it is the Super Bowl. I hate that analogy, but the Super Bowl of soccer. It's
come on,
I
the like Super Bowl is the Champions League of football.
Exactly. That's the better way to put it. But it certainly is, you know, a game that brings everyone together and out in the pubs and whatever. I'll be just the way the game falls this year, I'll be actually at a League One Ontario game immediately following it. So I will be near the stadium there down by the League One Ontario. So I'm going to support the ultimate in big football, and then I'm going to go down the street and I'm going to support the ultimate and support local football right immediately after that, Kevin.
I will be on my way to seeing Montreal versus the LA Galaxy, Stade Saputo, Saturday, May 28th. Always interesting when the Galaxy are in town, when you have a chance to see Keane and all that. Well, actually, no, because they're all gone to the Euros. But it's going to be interesting to see the Galaxy on Saturday right after this game. I'm still not sure, Dwayne, yet if I'm going to watch that game in the command center or if I'm going to go watch that game somewhere close to the stadium. Having to work after and cover a game, unfortunately, there won't be any alcoholic beverage included this year while I'm watching the Champions League final, but I'm going to find a way to enjoy the game anyways.
You don't need alcohol to enjoy football. That's nonsense there. No, I'll be in the same boat because I'm working immediately after that. But certainly there is an element of pub culture around that game. That's what we talked about this before. I used to love sort of when it was a bit underground here in North America, and it was always in midweek on the Wednesday, and we'd sneak out of work and go watch the game in the pub. And it was always like you'd walk past like empty pub, empty pub, empty pub, pub
one
past
full
the
pub.
Rim. And people, yeah. And people that didn't know the sport would be walking past this pub going, what the hell is going on in there? What are these people doing? And I think actually, to be serious, that probably brought people into the sport in North America because they'd be like, that looks like it's fun, and I want to be part of that part of that crowd. Soccer fans in North America, for better or worse, have always been party people, the people that are sort of a little bit crazy at times. So that's a lot of fun there. And I love the Champions League, as I said. It's been many years that it's been one of the pinnacle days of my year of my sporting calendar, and I look very much forward to Saturday. Predictions? I'll get your prediction. We'll talk a bit more about the Champions League in the call-in process if anyone wants to talk about it or after we talk to Elf. But do you have any predictions right now, Kevin?
Ooh, prediction. That's a good question, Dwayne. I'm looking at a club like Atletico Madrid, with defensively they're able to achieve results that we expect but that we don't necessarily think is possible. We always not necessarily play them down, but we're always count them as underdogs. So we're always like, yeah, they did great. They were defensively, they stopped Barca. Defensively, they stopped Bayern. But can they stop Madrid? You know, maybe we have to give some credit to Atletico to be able to pull off upset after upset. The season they had in La Liga, yeah, they didn't win. They finished third behind Real and Barca. But still, Atletico were able to go blow for blow in a long season, which is a little more difficult. In a knockout stage like the Champions League, they were able to get the advantages when they could, count on Griezmann double when they have to pull off an upset victory on the road. Or, you know, those type of performances by this club have been repeated after and after and after. And those performances are like, it's Simeone, it's the team, it's not individual player. Look, Dwayne, Fernando Torres is playing in that team. I mean, they are the Champions League final. So, just tactically, I think a Simeone is way above a Zidane, where Zidane has more of a motivator, more of the respect and admiration of the players, and they want to play for him. Simeone has an understanding of the game that, yes, Zidane's understanding of the game is, we understand, it's great. He played the game for 2 decades in the highest level. I understand that. But on the coaching side of things, Simeone might be right now the best coach on this planet, the best tactician, the best manager of men on this planet. So to find a way to beat him, I don't think Zidane has it in him yet.
I think Simeone is the best manager in the world right now, but I also question, I don't know whether Simeone could manage Real Madrid, though, like put aside the rivalry and all that sort of jazz and just sort of look at it in big versus small terms. And Zidane is a guy that I think had to manage a club like that. The big egos, the big personalities, you know, the superstarness of it, whatever. Like, you can't really have a guy like Simeone go and yell at them and make them, like, pee themselves on them if they don't do what they're supposed to do, right? Like, that's not necessarily how you manage Real Madrid. And I think that is, in many ways, an interesting contrast between the managerial styles there, and what works for different clubs is not always the same, right? So, but I love Simeone. I joked once, he is the man that every heterosexual male wishes they were, right? He's just, like, got that suave and the macho-ness and the toughness about him and all that sort of stuff. That he's kind of like not, the quintessential.
Yes, I was going to say, Dwayne, he's not sorry to be a man. He doesn't feel bad about being a man. He doesn't feel bad about having an attitude, about having some bad days and can and be angry. He's not apologetic about himself. And that's refreshing in a world where we're ashamed of whatever we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of, I asked you for the prediction, so it's only fair that I provide it as well. And as I said, after we talk to we'll probably do this. So go ahead, Kevin.
Are you a 1%er, Dwayne? Are you a 1%er, or are you with the 99%?
Well, I'm with the 99. There's no doubt about it. I've had a big crush on Atletico Madrid since I traveled to Madrid a few years ago, and people are probably sick of me telling the story of how I was there the day they won the Europa League for the first time in a long time in 2010. So it's an old story for me. So I'll absolutely be cheering. As soon as Manchester City got out of this competition, I was glad that Atletico Madrid was still in it, and there wouldn't have been no torn heart. There wouldn't have been any question, you know, about my loyalties being torn. City made the final, but nonetheless, Atletico has always served as a kind of a second choice for me in Europe anyway. So I will be cheering for Atletico Madrid just because I always cheer for Atletico Madrid in these situations. But even if I didn't have that kind of, you know, thin attachment, I still think I'd be cheering for them simply because, A, I always cheer for second teams. You know, the second teams of the city, Espanyol, Atletico Madrid, Manchester City, you name it.
City's the second team of Manchester? Oh, that's mean. You're saying that's your own
historically speaking. Historically speaking, there's no doubt about it. I don't hide from that. That's part of what makes City speak to me, is the fact that they are behind that big behemoth of the thing that is just a little outside in the suburbs there. So that's always why I cheer for the second teams of these cities. So, lots of fun stuff there. But in terms of my prediction, there is an element of destiny to Atletico Madrid this year, do you not think? And I kind of think they might finish the job. I think they might get that 1-0. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but unless you love tactics, and I think tactical geeks are going to love watching Atleti because they're so fascinating to watch how they can shut a team down. But I'm going to go with 1-0 for Atleti. That is my prediction, legitimately, beyond like emotional. I think that they will have finished the job.
It would be the most fitting result, wouldn't it? 1-0 would be the actually more fitting result for a team like Atletico, the way they play, the way that they don't have one superstar that scores 4 goals per game, but Zigo, I don't know if it's the best for the team. No, they have a team concept, players, misfits, rejects of other places gathered in Atletico or came back to Atletico, or young players that were discovered from a difficult background, never given any chances, and when they come to Atletico, they flourish. That's the idea, and they won nothing against a giant like Real Madrid. Keeping that clean sheet, which is maybe more important for them than scoring a goal, is literally what we call now Atletico and Simeone football. So that would just be probably what we would expect. People want to see fireworks. They would like to see a 4-3 type of game, but I don't expect this to happen with a team like Atletico that is going to work tactically to just shut down the midfield here.
Yeah, my biggest cheering thing, however, will be not going into extra time because of my previously mentioned work commitments, because I do not want to be watching the extra time of the Champions League final on my phone while trying to do other things. That does not seem like it's good for production or good for what I'm supposed to be doing. And if anyone's listening to this that is involved in League One, I promise you I will pay full attention to my duties for League One, but I will be tad bit distracted, and if there's a dead time, I'm going to damn well watch my phone, as you will be too. However, let's hope it ends before that, because there's time for that to happen. Kevin, we are waiting for Elf now to call in, so hopefully that'll happen soon. But in the meantime, let's sort of segue the conversation into a bit of the Jovinko stuff. And we talked about it, as I said yesterday, on Two Solitudes, about what we thought about this and whether we think that it is a snub or whether we think that this is just a situation for fit, right? And hopefully, I think that I believe it's probably a bit of both and a bit of both. Still there, Kevin?
Absolutely. No, I have to agree with you, Dwayne. But, you know, Giovinco not being chosen or in Europe or somewhere where Italy's really the league they follow, it's the omission of Pirlo that gathers the attention of people like, oh, Pirlo's not being chosen and all that. But I have to agree with you. Giovinco not being picked is a blow for Giovinco, but I think it's just maybe shows what type of reputation MLS still has on the other side of the pond.
All right, Kevin, let's take a real quick break while we try and get Alf on the line, and then we'll come back and have that conversation.
You are listening to the Sports Podcasting Network. You're a big soccer fan? ESPN is the place to be. USL Radio, NASL Nightcap, Two Solitude Soccer Podcasts, Off the Woodworks, Ours is the Fury, 2S Extra, the rest of the story. ESPN is the place to be.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Kevin Laramie here, joined as always with Dwayne Rollins.
I'm still here, Kevin.
All right. So
sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
No, I was just thinking, you know, Giovinco and the fact that he's not picked with the Italian national team, do you think it's going to affect Giovinco's play at all?
No, I don't think it will. I think that Giovinco is a player that just...
Hello.
Elf is joining us on the line now. Kevin, you're hearing Elf okay?
Hello. Hi.
Yes,
hi,
I can hear Elf.
It's okay. Elf, sorry for the confusion on trying to connect you here. We're still working out the bugs on our live show, but we do appreciate your time. Elf DeBlas is joining us now to talk about the Italian national team. We were just talking about Giovinco before you came on, Elf, and I'm wondering if we could just sort of start there and get your take on his omission from the Italian team's lineup.
Well, I was somewhat disturbed and angered by the omission, and obviously by the statement that Antonio Conte made when he was asked about specifically about Giovinco and Andrea Pirlo being excluded from the 30-man list. I think it shows a lack of foresight. I mean, I think it's at best a misguided statement and at worst an arrogant statement, because it illustrates a bit of a double standard. Because if you're going to make a case for a player like Salvatore Sirigu, who is also playing abroad at PSG and who rarely got in a game, and yet there's space for him to be a reserve goalkeeper, I don't see how you can make the argument that you can't find space for Sebastian Giovinco, particularly after the season that he had last year and the 10 or 12 game run that he's had so far this year in MLS. You know, you can also make a case for another player who's playing abroad in Pelé at Southampton, and he hasn't necessarily had what you might call an outstanding season. 12 goals in 32 games is fairly mediocre for a player of his caliber. But I guess because he's playing in the EPL, that he stands somewhat up above the status that Sebastian Giovinco has claimed. I gather that Conte is making a case for the players that got him through qualifying, and he's been loyal to them throughout. But if we're looking at the last number of games that Italy has played, the last four friendlies, they haven't won, and the last two matches that they played, they conceded five goals and only scored twice. And the last one, if you recall, was a 4-1 embarrassment against Germany. So I think the team is in real trouble, and if you can't make the case for Sebastian Giovinco to join you, in what looks like a really modest strike force at the moment, then there's something to be said for that.
Conte said last year that players shouldn't be punished for trying new things, to going to different leagues, and said that he regretted himself not trying different leagues out. But yet a year later, we're seeing a completely different tune. Makes me wonder, with him outgoing, of course, whether he has full control of that lineup selection, or whether some of the influences, maybe the more conservative, the more old world arrogant influences within the Italian camp are in his ear and sort of causing influences there. Do you feel that this legitimately are the 30 players that he would go with, or do you think there's other influences involved here?
I don't know about other influences. I think he's, I think he's loyal to a fault, and I know that he obviously, considering the player selection, I think I know that he wants to at least start the tournament with a 3-5-2 formation. Obviously, he's going to have the BBC group at the back with Barzagli, Bonucci, and Chiellini, because he's had those players for many years at club level. He knows them extremely well. So I don't know that any other outside factors, would have come into the decision, particularly, for that defensive group. I hesitate to think what this team will be faced with in their opening match against Belgium. And if we look at, we talked about a fairly modest attacking group of players who aren't going to strike a lot of fear into a lot of defenses. When you come up against Belgium and, your starting center backs across from you are Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen, who have spent a season at Tottenham, and a very excellent season at Tottenham. I don't think they're going to get many opportunities, particularly if they're going to start with Pelé up front and one of either Insigne or Eder or Zaza, neither of whom I really rate very highly, considering that many of them have been part-time players at their club level. So, I don't think there are outside forces necessarily at play here. I really think that these are the players that he felt were his best group through qualifying. But unfortunately, that group has not proven to be as effective in recent friendlies as they were through the course of the 2.5 year qualifying stage. And let's bring it into perspective. We're talking about a short-term tournament here, and not a qualifying stage that took a couple of years. So you really want to be able to select players that are going to be durable and are going to be effective for you in a short-term tournament. I just, looking up and down this lineup, I just don't see that being the case, apart from just a handful of players, and really he lists which is a bit unusual, because it's the first time I've seen this, but he lists wide players as a separate group of players from midfielders and strikers. And I think the quality of the wide players is probably the best thing that Italy has at the moment. The unfortunate thing is you can't play all six wide players at the same time. You can only play generally in a 3-5-2. You're only going to play two of those players at any one time, apart from some substitutions in the second half. But I really fear for Italy, particularly in the opening match against Belgium, for the reasons I mentioned.
Alf, when you're looking at Italy and Conte, he used the word consequences a lot in his statement 2 days ago when he talked about there's going to be consequences for the players, but he seemed to be talking about his staff and maybe himself. Is there a divide in the selection staff? Because if we can read between the lines, the way he was talking about the roster in that press release, he seemed a little worried. And the word consequences can almost be used to describe his job if Italy's not having the performances that some people expected them. What do you think that the feeling in the selection room was. Is it a consensus or were there big arguments?
I really don't know that there was necessarily any great discussion over the selections made. I just think that, as I mentioned before, he is very loyal to this cast of players. The other concerning thing is that he's included two players who are far from full fitness, and players who haven't necessarily been bright spots on their clubs and excelled this past season, and they are Thiago Motta and Ricardo Montolivo. So in calling these players into the 30-man squad, albeit it's a larger squad than most others, and he does have to trim it to 23 eventually, but to put your faith into these two players who are coming in with injuries and may not even necessarily see much time in training or even in the upcoming exhibition match says to me that he has invested a lot of his time into these players, and he wants them there because he knows them, and he feels comfortable with them in the side and figures that there are going to be opportunities for them to to be able to demonstrate on the side. I frankly don't see it. I mean, I don't know why he would call in players that are far from full fitness. Mind you, I guess a vast majority of these players coming off a laborious season at their respective clubs are not necessarily all going to be at full health. But when you do have players who are in good form and in good health, and I'm speaking about the MLS players, it boggles the mind. I mean, it just confuses me as to why he would make those types of decisions. So I really think that these are decisions that were taken by him and him alone. I don't know if there's necessarily a selection committee in place. I really think that it's really the Italian coach is called the technical commissioner, which is a title that gives for pomp and circumstance, but that's really who he is. And in fact, in many other newspapers and publications call the national team coach the selector. So it is very much a one-man show, and I think given the selections that were made, that these were all consensus in terms of Antonio Conte being the primary selector of the squad.
Alf, you mentioned Belgium and their first game versus Italy. You mentioned that you were a worry for Italy in their first game. What outside of that first match intrigues you? What in the group is for Italy? Is it possible for them to come out of the group? Is it a worry that they're going to burn out in the group stage? Is Belgium the clear favorite for that group?
I think yes, Belgium is definitely the clear favorite, and as the two of them are, coming to a head in that opening match on June 13th, I can think of is going back to a friendly that they played back in November, when the Italians were very mediocre in a 3-1 loss to the Belgians, and I can't see the result being any different, 8 months down the line. It's a very, very complete squad, the Belgian team, and they have a lot of dynamic players, throughout that squad. And if we look, you know, beyond just that tandem at the back, we're very effective. You have to look at a player like Raja Nainggolan in midfield, who had a sensational season at AS Roma in Serie A, and I know him quite well. I've watched him very closely over the course of the last number of seasons, and he's a player that Italy lacks in terms of his mobility, his fiery attitude, his aggressive nature, his striking ability for long distance. He's a player that can really carry the Belgians quite far. And then up front, you know, all you need to look at is a player of the abilities of Kevin De Bruyne, who can give that Italian defense a lot of headaches. And if you're going to play with three at the back, those three players are going to have to be very mobile. They're going to have to be very alert and agile. And I'm wondering, given the average age of those three players, whether they're going to be able to withstand, you know, a player with the skills and characteristics of a De Bruyne. So I really rate the Belgians quite highly. I think the Swedes and the Republic of Ireland are more or less at the same level, maybe a notch below, but certainly at a superior level in terms of squad depth and just recent results, that they too could be a real headache for Italy to get through. I mean, I'll sound pessimistic, but I can't see Italy just getting through this round. I can't see them any better than a third place team in this group.
And at least you have the best third place finishers to look forward to, I suppose. Alf, Italy always an enigma in the major tournaments. You never do know quite what you're getting, but it certainly does seem like one of the least positive sort of views heading into a tournament I've ever seen from Italian fans. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I mean, and it's all, you know, really, it's based on, as I said, the most recent results in friendlies, and a number of factors. I think, the fact that Antonio Conte is leaving the national team at the end of the Euros to take on the job at Chelsea, I think has left a lot of people with a bitter taste in their mouth. I think. It was a foregone conclusion he was going to leave at the end of the tournament, but I think going ahead and actually making a commitment to a club team before you've actually even started the process of preparing for the European Championships has rubbed people the wrong way, and I think that if he had stayed committed to the national program and perhaps have announced that he was going to leave, but not necessarily announced, you know, who he was going to join after the European Championships, it might have, you know, left people with a different feeling. I don't know whether he was pressured necessarily by Roman Abramovich and the Chelsea executives to make that announcement when he did, but I think it definitely factors into the kind of disillusion atmosphere, you know, around Italian observers and supporters and really the greatest disdain, I think, for him has come with the announcement of the 30-man list, and just the fact that you look up and down that selection, and there are very few players who can make an immediate impact in games that are crucial and critical for them to get results every 5 days. So. You know, that combination of things I think has left a lot of people disturbed, quite frankly. And I don't know necessarily that you know, the selection of Giovinco on its own would have made a great difference in the overall scheme of things, but certainly it would have appeased a lot of fans on this side of the Atlantic, perhaps because of the fact that we've followed him as closely as we have, and we know his abilities. And all we need to, to do is go back to, a qualifying match back in October when he came on as a late second half substitute, procured a goal for Italy in a comeback victory. And then, as we know, 24 hours later, he was on the field for TFC scoring a goal. So it's that that I think disturbs most people, that combination of things, from the fact that, Conte has already made plans beyond the European Championship. So is his focus necessarily on this squad? How much thought, did he put into the selection of players? And how much is he really willing and able to prepare this squad for the ultimate prize? And I think the 30-man selection list I think gives a lot of people just for those types of discussions.
Alf, before we let you go, we'd be remiss if we didn't look at the tournament as a whole, putting Italy aside for a second. Who do you think is going to be standing in the confetti when this is all said and done?
Wow, it's an interesting debate at the moment. I think if you look across the top end of teams, you obviously have to rate France as the host. We spoke briefly of Belgium, who come in as a top-ranked nation as well. And, of course, Germany are the World Cup holders and always are an effective tournament team. If I were to look beyond those three nations and consider who would be a dark horse or who would be a team that would be at the next level, you have to consider perhaps a nation like Turkey that has spent some years in kind of the wilderness, but are back in the top echelon, and I think it's a team with a lot of talent through their lineup, and that can pose some trouble, particularly in their group. I also like, I do like the group of players that Roy Hodgson has called in, because he's got the spine of the group from Tottenham, who played so well this season. And I think he'll have an effective group of young, hungry players who can take that nation, I think, quite far. So, overall, if we're looking at challengers and contenders for the title, I think those are the ones that I look at first and foremost. Obviously, with the expanded format this year with 24 teams, there's so much more opportunity for teams that have been outsiders in the past to be much more in the way of significant participants in this tournament, given the nature of it. But I think you still have to look at the combination of talent, technical ability, and tournament experience. And I think the teams that I mentioned probably have all those things combined.
All right, June 10th can't come fast enough. My favorite tournament on the calendar every 4 years. Alf, I do thank you for your insight as always, and hopefully we'll touch base with more Italy news down the line.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks, Dwayne. Thanks for the opportunity.
Cheers.
You are listening to Soccer Today, live on SPN Radio. Give us a call. Studio line 929-477-3874.
You heard the man. Give us a call, 929-477-3874, to talk about anything you want. You can talk about the Giovinco stuff. Are MLS fans being hypersensitive, or is Conte being a little bit stubborn and old-world arrogant here, folks? We'd love to hear your opinion, who you think is going to win the Champions League, what you want, what you're looking forward to Saturday, what you're looking forward to in the Euros. You can talk about the U.S. roster at the Copas. You can talk about the Albanian roster at the Euros if you want, Kevin.
Yeah, that's my big question. That's the hot take of the day. What do you think about the Albanian roster? Sure, you can call if you want to talk about that or talk about anything you would like. Any preference who's going to win on Saturday? The White Madrid or the Red and White Madrid? Which one is your favorite? 929-477-3874.
All right. While we wait to see if anyone's feeling brave enough to call and talk to us today, we'll have a little bit of a chat about Italy. And as I said to Elf, I have never – the Italians are usually pretty confident, we'll call it, okay? They tend to be very proud people that love their team. They love the Azzurri. And you can understand why. I know a lot of Italians, and God love them. They're always ready to tell you how they're going to win every major tournament. But this tournament, they almost sound English. They're already dismissing their chances, and it's just a unique situation for me to see. And I'm not too sure why, because Italy always has this ability in my mind to find a way to grind its way through tournaments, unless it completely crashes out. That happens too. But generally, that happens when they're all excited and they think that their chances are at their top level. How do you see Italy's tournament playing out, Kevin?
Italy, I think it's going to be tough for them to achieve anything. But it's always the story with Italy. Whenever they achieve great results or get to a final of a World Cup or of a Euro, like we have seen recently, you know, we never expect them to get there, but they always find a way to get there. So we always dismiss them at the beginning. Then they always struggle with first and second game. In the third game, they usually get the result that they need, just barely enough to get out. But then when it comes back out stage, they get the job done. They get that result. If it goes to extra time or penalties, they win. They get through. And then momentum starts to build. And then the pressure and the hype and the ecstasy and the happiness and the glory comes and it builds and it goes from round to round. That's usually a typical Italian tournament. It's going to be interesting to see if in a 2014 Euro they can do the same, or maybe even, I was going to say, start on a better foot, but they do have Belgium to start the tournament. So it's going to be hard to start on a good foot against maybe one of the top 2-3 teams in this whole tournament.
Exactly. Yeah, Italy, I think that they are probably in trouble, and I wonder whether – I don't know. I can't put a finger on exactly what it is or why it is that this is a lower generation, a generation that might be crashing out, that might be at the back end of things, not really ready to compete. I'm just disappointed myself, speaking on a personal level, that my favorite player, my favorite Italian by far, Mario Balotelli, won't be on this roster because, God, Mario is fun. I miss Mario. Mario, come back. Come back to the world football prominence while you get your stuff together just enough, not too much, but just enough so that you can be back in the headlines consistently, because we all miss you, Mario. I miss Mario.
No, exactly, right? He was giving at least attention, storyline, drama, and, well, fun. He was bringing fun to the game because he is having fun when he's playing usually. He's playing his best is when he's having fun. So, no, you're right. We miss you, Super Mario. Super Mario, come back, eh? Come back. It's me, Mario.
I still have my Why Always Me t-shirt that I wear occasionally. It gets funny looks. I was wearing my Why Always Me t-shirt out and about, like, with just normally I wear it under stuff because it's 4 years old now, so it's getting on. I might have to retire it soon, but I was wearing it out without anything over it the other day. Yeah, I don't know how easy it would be to get a new one at this point. They don't make the city store's not exactly selling them anymore. Yes, this lady literally ran across the street to say, I want one for my husband. I want one for my husband. Where can I get one? And I had to explain the whole thing to her. I think her eyes started to glaze over about halfway through the conversation, but nonetheless. All right, if you want to to touch base with us on Twitter at 24th Minute. That's numerical 24th Minute at Caballero May at SportsPodNet. If you want to do that as well, we can address your questions that way. As always, you can email us too, Kevin, if you want to give the emails. We won't get them until after the show, but feel free. You can send us a long email.
Yeah.
And also,
I was going to say the sportspodcastingnetwork@gmail.com. And there's the Patreon, the crowdfunding aspect of the network, where with your donation, we're able to get the microphone that you hear us now talking on, get the new live capabilities outside of Blog Talk Radio as well, for Open Lines After Dark, for as well as the MLS post game show, all the shows here we have now in studio, an actual switchboard and all that. And that's thanks to your donation. So if you want to join the movement, help us achieve our vision, help us grow, help us do more of those live shows. Patreon, that's patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $1 a month, $2 a month, it helps us greatly. And if you go with the full pledge, the full dive, $10 a month subscription to the Patreon, you will have a jump in front of everybody. When we have a big phone line queue, you will be, as a insider, able to jump the line, Dwayne. So give us a hand. Give us support. Patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork.
All right. I don't want to belabor the Channel 2 playing Doctor Who repeats, asking you for money stuff on public television too much here. But if you do want to give us an individual donation, a single time donation, you don't think you can go month to month, that's also obviously appreciated greatly. You can do it through my PayPal, which.
Sorry, but I was going to say, there's always I apologize. Go ahead, Dwayne.
I just trying to give my PayPal address and then DG Rollins. So that's DGROLLINS@gmail.com if you want to give a single donation. Kevin, go ahead and finish your thought.
If the single donation aspect is possible on Patreon as well. Just give 1 month and you cancel right after, and it'll be just a 1 month donation as well.
Yeah. All right. Just to give you a little bit of a planning before we go back and finish with maybe some MLS talk today. June 6th is the date that we have circled for going potentially daily. Now, where our plan is right now is that Mondays and Fridays will remain our Two Solitudes day. Two Solitudes on Mondays, 2S Extra on Fridays. Those will be podcasts that you will have the option of listening to as we record. But there won't be call-ins for those shows. However, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the plan is to have call-ins in there. And during the Copas and the Euros, we will be going 5 times a week. Daily is the wrong way to put it, because I don't think we're ready to give the weekend up just yet. We will be asking you for your support during that month so that we can continue it after that. We're going to give you, without any expectation, we're going to show you what we're going to do with the support. We'll set a target to meet that, to get there, and that's what we're going to do moving forward, because I know that a lot of you want daily coverage, and I'm just going to be blunt that to provide you daily coverage, weekday coverage, it requires a degree of support from you, not necessarily millions, but enough that we can justify it and justify not doing other stuff to do pay our bills. So that is why we're asking for it. We're not greedy. We're just being realistic and being upfront about exactly what would be required. So that's on that note. Leave it for today, though, Kevin, and let's go and talk a little bit about Major League Soccer right now. We talked about the funk Montreal was in the last show on Two Solitudes this past week. Let's just continue that conversation, because it was kind of broken up into 3 different parts on last day's show. And if you want to download that off iTunes and all the normal places, go ahead, please do. But let's go back, Kevin, and get your fuller thought. How concerned are you right now about the impact and whether or not they can drag themselves out of what is now is it 6 or is it 5?
It's 6 games without a win. It started with the Toronto win, the Montreal defeat at home, then 4 draws, then the Orlando defeat. So 6 games without a win for Montreal. It is a funk, but if you look at the one thing that's consistent throughout those games, it's the amount of chances on net by the Montreal Impact. It's the amount of shots generated towards the target by the Montreal Impact, by Piatti, by Arduro, by Venegas Santivero last game. Piatti had the goal 3.5 minutes in against Orlando, but had about 10 of the chances that were either blocked or saved by the goalkeeper. So the chances are there. It's a question of matter of time before the ball breaks the plane and creates a goal. It's going to happen. We're not worried, because you see the chances being created. There's a certain disconnect between Drogba and the rest of the team on the pitch in that last phase of play because they're trying to get the ball to him too early, that will be corrected. But the chances, even outside of Drogba, are being created. So I'm not worried in that aspect. I'm just worried defensively. They are not necessarily able to keep clean sheets this year. It's not on Evan Bush. It's on the back line. And it's been a carousel at the back line because of injuries. Even now, because of international duties and injuries, you're looking at a back line that's basically André Lefebvre because Tony Toye is injured. He's a few weeks from coming back. You have Ambrose Oyongo gone with Cameroon for two friendlies. You have Laurent Simard gone with the Belgium national team. Assun Kamara just came back from injury, but he just came back from injury. Victor Cabrera hasn't been the same confidence and awareness-wise since his big knock a few months and a half ago. So you're looking at a backline left of André Lefebvre. So that's where the question lies, in my opinion, for the Montreal Impact. Do they have to address the situation in the few weeks from now with the transfer market reopening for MLS in the summer window? Is it time to do so? There's no rumblings, but it might be the questioning, and that's what they're asking themselves right now. Should we do something about this problem, this conundrum, and maybe even get a number 10 too? Because Ari Shipp hasn't fulfilled expectation. Let's be honest. He hasn't found the quick chemistry that he had for the first two games, and something changed. They maybe trying to change him. Maybe he should back to playing the way he knows. I don't know. But the expectation hasn't been met there. So they need a 10, and they need badly a backline right now.
The Shipp is interesting, and let's talk about him real quickly before we move on. And again, that number, if you want to give us a call quick, we have about 10 minutes left before we'll shut it down if we don't have any calls, 929-477-3874. But Shipp is a player let's face it, let's be blunt about this for a second. Chicago did, in fact, give up on him, even though he was a crowd favorite, even though he was from the area. They did give up on him. And there had to be a reason, technically, when they had the new management come in there, that they did that. What I had heard is that maybe there were some people that thought that he was not technical enough, that he wasn't necessarily a player that could bring the highest level of athleticism or be able to provide a high level of technical ability to play in a system that was more geared that way. Do you feel confident that Shipp can find a place on the Impact, or are you getting concerned about whether or not this might be a player that peaked in his rookie season?
No, I do feel he can find a spot with the Impact. We've seen what he can do in his first two games with the club this year with Nacho Piatti when the club scored six goals in two games. We have seen that from Shipp just a few months ago. So I'm not worried that Shipp can't bring this. It's maybe more an adjustment period of finding his actual role with the club. What type of play should he do in the system? The system cannot be built around him. And when he just came in with the club, that's where he was successful. So that tells you that when he didn't know anything about the system, he came here and was successful playing the way he was playing, but the coaches and the staff were maybe not 100% happy with the rest of his work on the pitch, which is the one thing that's not flashy that the people don't see. And in a system, that's what we're talking about. So ball recuperation and all that they want maybe a number 10 to do. So that all being said, the more he was accustomed to the Montreal Impact ways to do soccer on a grass pitch, the less effective he has become. So again, that reminding that you cannot build the whole team around the player like Shipp. You need to adjust Shipp's role to fit the need of the team. They haven't found that need yet. They haven't found that fit. And I talked to Jonathan Tannenwald last week on the post-game show, and we talked about Harry Shipp, and he was saying, Harry Shipp is the type of player that likes to pass the ball, to give the ball, to create, to do things with it, and he likes to play in the midfield. So they should change the role that they do have with the number 10 of supporting the attack and being almost the aggressor with the ball, Piatti-wise, and more of him focusing on distributing to Piatti and to Drogba. So maybe that's the answer to all, but he needs to be comfortable in the Impact system. It still doesn't seem to be the case.
All right. Game tonight, of course, as well, to move past the Impact, Orlando and Philadelphia. Interesting battle there in the Least Conference, as we're calling it now. That is something that I'm curious about, Kevin. I'm wondering what your theory is. Why are Eastern conferences, uniformly the weaker conferences within all of North American sports right now, including MLS? Do you have any theories on that, or is it just random?
Could it be because in a free agency world over the years, over the last 30 years, people have been smart enough and moved where it was warmer? Could that be the answer to that question?
Maybe in the other sports, yeah.
Soccer, if you have a choice between living in Philadelphia and Chester or playing for the Galaxy, Seattle, Vancouver, Portland, which still doesn't have a winter in my books. So, choice is not that hard, Dwayne.
Yeah, I suppose. I'm an East Coast guy, though. Like, the West Coast, like, I can appreciate it's pretty and it's warm, but it just doesn't speak to me in the same way that the East Coast, that kind of East Coast grab the world by the, you know what, sort of feeling about it. That's my personality. But maybe the other thing I've always thought of, too, when you go outside soccer, because MLS, I think it might be random in MLS. Because there's not a lot of free agency, but you do have, you know, outside signings. There's that element of it. You're right. And certainly the Galaxy are the team that most people know, and it doesn't help that New York, the Red Bulls, were incompetently run for many years when they were the Metro Stars, and they weren't able to sort of have an East Coast place where free agents would be, like world free agents would be attracted to. But outside of that, I've always wondered whether the old money that runs Eastern Conference teams, and it generally is because they're big media markets, you have to have a lot of money, like, you know, MLSE here in Toronto, it has to have a lot of money behind it to operate. So that maybe have an inherent conservatism to them that doesn't allow the Eastern teams to excel. But that's getting off topic from soccer, though, Kevin.
No, exactly. Again, 929-477-3874. Give us a line to predict who will win the Champions League on Saturday, too. If you are a Madrid fan, let us know because, well, it's Madrid versus Madrid. So let us know. You cannot choose Madrid. You have to be more clever than that, people. Come on.
So specific. It's Real versus Atleti.
Exactly. Don't go to sports, to select sport or to your sports book and say, hey, I put the house on Madrid. No, it's not going to work.
Fair enough. Hell, you want to talk to me about the Raptors? You can do that on Twitter, though. But anyway, speaking of which, I'm getting nervous about that, Kevin.
That's right. You never know, right? Game. If the Raptors win.
I'm speechless. We're thinking about it because it's six games win away right now. But I never... until, believe it or not, watching Oklahoma City win last night to take a 3-1 lead in that series was the first time during this playoff run that I started to think about the possibility, however slight, of the Toronto Raptors standing in confetti at the end of things. And
in the final, and Toronto beats Oklahoma. The fluke where San Antonio, Golden State, Cleveland have been knocked out, Toronto slips by and wins the whole damn thing.
Yeah, that started to cross. I mean, we're talking about in the Women's World Cup, to bring this back to soccer. I piss people off by calling the Canada 1%. And then I mathematically showed where I was getting that from, and it turns out that I was overestimating their chances. But nonetheless, I suspect that the Raptors are at that 1%. But, you know, to steal Jim Carrey's line, I'm saying there's a chance. There's no chance for the Knicks, guys, or the 76ers. The Raptors will have a 1% chance.
I have a question for you, Dwayne. Who wins the championship? Who wins the championship first?
Who's going
to
win?
Yeah, no. Championship first. The Raptors or TFC?
Oh, wow. I would say that it's more likely TFC would win a championship because I could see TFC making the playoffs, and if they're healthy, they could win a championship this year. And there's just more randomness within Major League Soccer. It's really hard in basketball. It's especially really hard in basketball when you don't have a superstar. And it's especially hard to get a superstar in Toronto. I think the Raptors' best chance to get a superstar will come when Andrew Wiggins becomes a free agent. He is a Toronto boy. He was a Raptors fan. There might be a little bit more open-mindedness to coming up to Canada at that particular point, to coming to Toronto. But by and large, when you're talking about a Durant or someone like that coming in, it's a bit fiction, right? So it's hard to conceptualize the Raptors winning a championship, and in many ways, that's what's making this so stressful right now.
They're six games away. Six wins away.
There may never be a more perfect storm to allow them to win a title than right now. So even though I think it's only 1%, and even though it's been a great run and it's so much fun, and I'm looking forward to tonight, I've actually been banned from my apartment. I'm not allowed to watch the game in the apartment tonight because I almost got evicted in the last game. So anyway, that's fun stuff there. There's 10 seconds left before the top of the hour. So unless there's a call coming in the next few minutes, we will start to wrap it up now. Kevin, one quick thing, just a few housekeeping things quick. We already went with all the money and all that jazz and what our plan is going forward. But one other thing I wanted to get out there before we say goodbye today is that I am on the hunt for people that want to be correspondents during the Euro and during Copas. You don't necessarily have to be there, but certainly if you are over there, let us know if you are willing and able and interested in taking a phone call from us and sharing your insights from a fan perspective. It doesn't have to be anything over the top. We just want to include people in this and have a North American-wide conversation about these tournaments that matter to us. So if you're interested in that, give us a shout at all the various platforms that we listed before. Sports Podcast. What's the email again, Kevin? I always forget the emails because you handle them.
sportspodcastingnetwork@gmail.com.
Exactly. Or you need my personal email, even like Dwayne G. Rollins, DwayneGRollins @gmail.com, or Kevlar May, or whatever you want off the woodworks. There's lots of different ways to get a hold of us, and we put them out there all the time. So just let us know, and we'd love to set that up for those near daily shows, that 5-10 weekly shows that we will be during the Euros and the Copas, Kevin. So do you have any final thoughts before we say goodbye to this penultimate pilot edition of Soccer Today?
Well, again, you mentioned earlier, like, the planning for the thing. When we want to do shows that have open lines, the best capabilities and the best option for the callers is what you are listening to right now. It's not ideal, we know. The audio quality live is not ideal, we know, but the switchboard and the callers permits more than one caller to call at a time and has a better capabilities for all parties involved during that live radio call. Outside of that, when me and Dwayne or myself do solo live shows, we can do them in a lot more high quality audio type of fashion. And that's on the YouTube page of SPN Radio. Just type SPN Radio on YouTube. You will find the page, subscribe, and you will find the high quality live sports radio shows that you crave. For the open line shows, it will be here on blogtalkradio.com/SPN Radio. And for both of them, you can find them, as always, on sportspodcastingnetwork.com/SPN Radio.
All right, and on that note, Kevin, I will say goodbye, and you can wrap the show up as you always do.
Have a great soccer.
You were listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit us, sportspodcastingnetwork.com.